It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Buck.
It's the BBC. Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Yep.
Buckeye Battle Cry.
Buck.
It's the BBC.
This is Mecha Dawn. You are listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Peace.
Never running from the mission. On the heat up in the kitchen. See the light, we got a vision. On the ladder, escalator. On a mission to be greater. To the top is where we going. We don't care about a hater.
Slow it down for a second. Actually, let's not, cause we might give him a chance to catch up. So
let's go to the top.
Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. You can find us on Buckeye Sports Radio app, as well as BuckeyeSportsRadio.com, part of vSporto, as we talk college basketball. National Letter of Intent Day coming up next week. We'll talk more with Jeremy Birmingham of 11Warriors.com, but this week we got to talk Big Ten. It's all over the place, and to do so, Andy Coppins joins us of Talking10.com, as well as MadTownBadgers.com. Andy, how's it going?
Hey, not too bad, you know. At least we're not sitting in Boston with 2 feet of snow. I'll take a break from snow for a while.
Absolutely. You know, where you're now in Chicago, but where you were from was similar to where I was last in Marquette, Michigan. And there you're getting about 150 inches, 125 inches a year.
Yeah, no, we never got that much in Green Bay, but you're getting close to 80, 90 inches. It's still enough, and, you know, we've kind of been spared this year so far, at least here in Chicago. So, you know, maybe the move is a smart one.
You know, and I got warm, sunny skies in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, the topic's Big Ten basketball. Things have been sunshiny in ways. Things have been dark and other. It's been a weird year for Big Ten basketball.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, you know, I if you follow the conference a lot, then maybe you've seen some of it coming, just simply because of all the talent that they've kind of lost over the last 2 years, really. But at the same point in time, you know, Joe, I really think that this is a deep league. It's not a great league in terms of it doesn't have the four or five, you know, nationally elite programs that they've had, you know, in the last really 4 years or so. But at the same time, you've got, what is it, eight or nine teams that are jumbled with two or three losses in this conference. And that's over half the programs that are right in the middle of everything. You know, normally there's a little bit of a break by this point in time between the very top of the conference and kind of, you know, the middle and then everybody else, but there's absolutely no break. I mean, you know, the Badgers have a lead of just two games or a game and a half, depending on where you're at, on eight teams in the conference.
It's crazy. And the thing that I think gets overlooked a little bit, and you mentioned it there, was the changing the guard really in the conference, where we've seen the last few years, we've seen teams with players that have 3-4 years experience. Now when you look at the conference, there's been a lot of change in the guard when it comes to freshman play. Four of the top 20 scorers in the league are freshmen, and you're seeing that infused into the league, where it's been across college basketball mostly already, but I think this is the first year where you can say some of that one-and-done effect is really, really here.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think, you know, with the Mitch McGarry situations and some of the stuff that's happened at Indiana, and you take a look, you know, even to a lesser extent at Michigan State, because they've always had guys leave early. But this is kind of the first time that you've really seen, you know, some of the schools kind of have to adjust on the fly here. And, you know, Wisconsin could be facing that this offseason as well with the, you know, the emergence of Sam Dekker. You know, and it's going to be a topic that needs to be discussed, but it's going to be really intriguing to see what happens. You know, you also have, you know, the Mellow Trimbles, the guys that are really kind of performing well, the James Blackman Juniors, the D'Angelo Russells. Do they stay for another year? Do they just one and done it? And that's something that the Big Ten really has not faced in quite some time.
How hard do you think it is to turn around a basketball program? I think back to a couple, 4 or 5 years ago, where Indiana was and how they were able to get back with the Christian Watfords and Zellers and Victor Oladipo's of the world. It took a while to get back. I don't think people really understand how hard it is to build a program up to what some of these programs are in the Big Ten.
You know, I agree with you, but I mean, can you really say Indiana is necessarily 100% back?
No.
You know, and could, because, you know, at a school like Indiana, to be back means having, you know, being a program that's competing not only for Big Ten, but national championship honors on a nearly yearly basis. And that is just not where this program is right now. I mean, they're good. You know, Yogi Ferrell, James Blackman Jr., you know, Hannah Mascarera Pereira. I mean, some of those guys are quality players, but at the same point in time, they're still very young, and even Yogi Ferrell is a very inconsistent player at times. So it's going to be intriguing to see what happens, but you know, I think it's harder for programs with massive expectations to continue to build. I think you take a look at, you know, even Michigan in football, you take a look at, you know, Nebraska in football, where they've kind of had to rebuild and revamp the brand identity. But at the same point in time, when you take a look at in Indiana and then you take a look at Northwestern on the basketball side, there aren't that many expectations. But when you see them play, you can tell that they've at least elevated the level of play on the court. And I don't know if you can necessarily say that Indiana's done or sustained enough success to be able to say that they're really back.
And they had the stretch of the last year. Last year, they were horrendous. Despite having a couple of good players on the team. And it goes to how much coaching plays a factor in this, because if I were to ask you, all right, Andy, you got one game to win, you've got Tom Crean or Chris Collins, I think you would take Chris Collins. I would. I don't know about you, but...
I wouldn't yet.
You wouldn't yet? Not quite?
No, because, you know, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but... You take a look at they're 1-6 right now, and I think 5 of their 6 losses are by less than 10 points. They have not found a way to get over the hump, and that's a sign of a coach that can get his team there, but the players aren't there. But at the same point in time, until they actually do it, I don't know if you can give credit to the coach for getting him there. And at least we've seen Tom Crean's teams win big games. I mean, you think back to beating Kentucky.
Zone, right?
Oh, yeah, very true. But I mean, but look at them taking down number one Kentucky a few years ago. I mean, you know, they've at least proven that they've got the capability. So I would go Tom Crean just for the experience factor. Chris Collins is a very young coach. I think Collins could be as good, if not better, than Crean was or is. And that bodes well for Northwestern's future as a basketball program. But right now, I'm not ready to sell or not ready to buy Chris Collins being the guy that I would want to win me a one shot game.
I think when you look at what Northwestern's done, and they've had some very close games, as you mentioned, and mm-hmm. the way that they played with Chris Collins in mind. I think when you look at the type of program Northwestern has to be, Rutgers has to be right now, the program right. that when you look at the program that has to take guys and build them 3-4 year players mm-hmm. and make them the type of players that can be top notch and lead you to something valuable in the conference, a third or fourth place finish. When you got a guy like Chris Collins and you look at the young talent there, something's going right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with both of those programs. When you take a look at the fact that, you know, at Rutgers, you've got a freshman in Kadeem Jack who, you know, if it weren't for D'Angelo Russell and James Blackman Jr. And you know, Melo Trimble at Maryland, you'd be arguing that he's probably the top freshman in the conference. And then you got Brian McIntosh at Northwestern. There's a lot to really like about what's going down for both of those programs in terms of the young talent that's in and then coming into the programs in the next year or so. So this is going to be intriguing to see what happens and how things kind of to shape out. And, you know, I mean, all you need to do really is necessarily look at what's going on at Minnesota as well with, you know, some of the young talent getting into the mix and it not quite working out yet.
Andy Coppins with us. You can check out his work, Talking10.com. Follow him on Twitter at Andy on Football and Talking10 on Twitter at Talking_10. I think some of these programs like Northwestern and Rutgers, as they look forward, they got to look mm-hmm. at some of the type of moves and maneuvers that John Beilein's made at Michigan, because when he walks in, he's got some guys that were underlooked in recruiting. Mm-hmm. Trey Burks comes off to mind right away, that he could have for 2 or 3 years and develop that program. And they've developed so fast that guys like Nick Stauskas are out the door faster than expected. And then you put your programs on the right way, and now you're in the standing of where your program wants to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think Northwestern will never, ever be a school that's going to get your one-and-dones or, you know, that type of a situation. And if it happens, it's going to be a rare situation. But at the same point in time, what Chris Collins is doing a good job of doing is finding a way back into recruiting Chicago players. You know, Brian McIntosh is a great example. Michael Thompson and some of these other players that are in the program now might not have been in there in the past, and that's just a massive situation. And Collins was a great hire. He's a Chicago guy. He's got the connections. You know, yeah, it was through his dad with the Bulls and all of that, but, you know, he was a coach in Chicago, and that plays well with other, you know, coaches on the AAU and the high school circuit. And, you know, outside of Chicago, the AAU circuit here isn't quite as big. It has a lot to do with your high school connections. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But he's got this program on the right track. And you look at Eddie Jordan, I think he's doing some really masterful work in terms of motivation. And the RAC is becoming a place that not a lot of people want to go to right now to play against, because it's not fun. It's not a fun environment for road teams. And if that environment can stabilize and be a long-term advantage for them, then it becomes something that, you know, attracts other players. And, you know, you mentioned that at Michigan. I mean, Aubrey Dawkins, you know, take a look at what's happened with him. And, you know, Abdul Rahim Rahman, the third 90th middle name, you know, not to be disrespectful, but it's, you know, but when you take a look at him and Dawkins and some of the other young players on this roster, they've gotten their opportunities because they've seen the progression of other players. And that's the important part.
Andy Coppins with us as you're listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour on BuckeyeSportsRadio.com. We're talking Big Ten basketball. We're talking about Rutgers and Northwestern and those programs. With the talk that we had earlier, when you look at the conference and a lot of the talent being left last year, a lot more talent will be leaving this year. You look at Frank Kaminsky, you look at Aaron White, you look at those guys, Taryn Petaway, they'll be leaving. New young players will be coming in. How important to kind of balance that out is to have these programs such as Purdue, Rutgers, and Northwestern, Penn State to some extent, be competitive?
Well, I think it's huge that Purdue is, you know, becoming competitive again. They're finally getting something out of A.J. Hammonds, which, you know, it feels like we've talked about him for the last half a decade or so. But, I mean, they're getting some production there. Isaac Haas is looking like, you know, the real deal there. And they're going to be, you know, Matt Painter has stabilized that program after some really lean years here in the middle of his tenure. And it looks like he's got this program back in the right direction. It's going to be intriguing to see what happens in the future with that program, but it seems like things are going well. So I would not be surprised to see Purdue kind of be a challenger in that top four position, you know, maybe not this year, but definitely in the next two or three.
It's really interesting to me how this league has changed so much and how you look at how guard heavy it is and how good the guards are this year compared to when you talk about Big Ten forwards and centers, there might be five, six guys you talk about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you think Jake Layman, you think Frank Kaminsky, you think obviously Aaron White, Hammonds, Hannah Mascarera Pereira, you might think about, and then Haas. But outside of that, I mean, I'm just kind of going through the mental Rolodex here, and maybe I'm missing a few players. But, you know, maybe
Trent Williams at Indiana Williams, I mean.
Yeah, maybe Troy Williams. But, again, that's a little bit of a stretch. And then maybe Amir Williams. But even, that's a definite stretch.
Yes. That, as an Ohio State fan, you can say that's definitely a stretch longer than his wingspan. That's for sure. That's the thing that's crazy about it is you look back to the history of the Big Ten, and I think some of the older fans out there can recognize this in the people that just love Big Ten basketball is we've had so many great big guys compared to guards in this league that this is college basketball though now these days.
Yeah, exactly. It's a guard heavy situation, and it's because the NBA is a guard heavy league. Flat out the honest truth. And the other honest truth is that the NBA is putting a premium on 7-footers. And when you do that, it's rare that they stick around in college basketball. Had Frank Kaminsky been who he is now his freshman year, is he even at Wisconsin right now? Hell no. you take a look at those things. So I think it's cyclical in nature. I think, you know, I think in 5 years you might see it be a front court heavy league again, or front court heavy situation at a bigger level across college basketball. But right now, there's no way you can say it's anything but a guard heavy scenario. I mean, look at Kentucky, look at Duke, look at, you know, I mean, sure, they've got Jahlil Okafor and stuff like that, but it's, you know, what they're doing on the perimeter that's really mattering. And it's going to be intriguing. You know, I find it really interesting because you got your Virginias, your Villanovas, your Wisconsins that are really kind of heavy up front, and they do some real good work up front, and their guards are almost the underrated part. And it's weird because it's usually the guards are the overrated part and the bigs don't get enough attention.
Do you think that because Frank Kaminsky kind of shot on the scene and grew into his position literally, and he's the best Big Ten player, a favorite to win the best Big Ten player of the year. I mean, that's a given at this point, 17 points per game and 8 rebounds. But do you think that gets a little bit underrated because of his tangibles and he doesn't really face anybody that could really test those tangibles?
I don't think so because, I mean, you saw what he did against Iowa, right? They've got Adam Woodbury. They've got Aaron White. You know, he obviously frustrated the crap out of Woodbury to the point where Woodbury was rubbing his head and poking him in the eye. What's that all about? But I think that just goes to show you that, you know, he does so much that is so much he does so much off the ball that part almost gets underrated. You take a look at Frank Kaminsky and what he does when he doesn't have the ball. and how it affects the game, it is crazy to watch. Just watch how many people are watching him and not watching the rest of that team. I mean, that Iowa game was a great example of it, simply because every time Frank Kaminsky came within, you know, 2 or 3 feet of the 3-point line, suddenly everybody else on that team was driving. I mean, there were, I think, at least 7 possessions in a row where Wisconsin literally drove, whether it was Kaminsky, Decker, Hayes, Koenig, or Gosser. I think all 5 of them had at least 1 drive in the second half from the 3-point line right to the rim. And it's all because of the attention that they were putting on Kaminsky.
How do you defend the guy? I mean, how do you... Michigan went with an interesting... I thought there was...
It almost worked.
It almost worked, it, and he looked uncomfortable at times. But once he figured that out, how do you stop him?
Well, I think the thing that Michigan did in that game that worked is that they switched between the 1-3-1, the 2-3, and going man. And they did a good job of doing that. What they got away from in the second half is when Frank Kaminsky started to figure out the middle of that 2-3 zone and started becoming an assist machine, they got away from going zone. That's exactly what happened. Wisconsin pulled them right out of their zone because of Frank Kaminsky's ability to dominate in the middle there after a while. And once that happened, it was lights out for Michigan at that point. And, you know, he took over overtime, 8 points, 8 of his 22 in overtime alone. And that's a 5-minute span. That's over a point a minute for one person. That's not what you want on a defensive effort.
I think a part of it, too, when you're guarding Kaminsky and you're trying to stop him, if you want to try and stop Wisconsin, part of the factor is that you can't stop Wisconsin by stopping Kaminsky because they're just too good. But when it comes to Kaminsky himself, one thing that Michigan did well in that first half, too, was constantly giving him a different person guarding him to keep them fresh as mm-hmm. well as give different looks to Kaminsky.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. The other part of the factor is that I think more than most teams, they did a good job of double-teaming him before the ball got there. What a lot of teams like to do, or for whatever reason, is flash a double-team coming at him when he's receiving the ball, either in the post or on the wing or whatever it is. That's too late because Kaminsky's thinking 3 steps ahead. If he gets a glimmer that somebody's coming, he's already thinking about where he's passing the ball or what move he's going to be able to make. And you need to get to him before he gets that 1 or 2 steps ahead of you. You've got to be ahead of him on the defensive side of the ball, and that's not easy. I think that the mental part of Frank Kaminsky's game is probably the most underrated part. I mean, they did a great job on, I think, both ESPN Game Day and on Big Ten The Journey of really showcasing how he breaks down film and what he does mentally when he doesn't have the ball that sets everything else up. It's crazy to watch that.
How much does Bo Ryan play in the factor of when you look at Kaminsky, for example? He's got long range. The dude can shoot from 3-point territory without any problems. But in that Michigan game, he decided, and I'm sure the coaching staff decided once they saw the look defensively, we're not going to go for a long range shot because you're going to be guarded by a guard. That's not only just mentality wise and being smart IQ wise, just having that willingness to go inside and battle. That's missing from today's game.
Yeah, and Kaminsky's not afraid to battle. Neither is Nigel Hayes, you know, to a lesser degree. And even take a look at Josh Gosser, the guard. He's not afraid to go in there and battle either. I mean, how many times did you see him take on, one of the 2 big men that Michigan had in that game? So I think it's a mentality thing. It's a Bo Ryan mentality. Everybody on that team better be prepared to play and bang and go down low. Everybody, whether it's, you know, the 5'11 point guard or the 7-foot, you know, giant out there, if you're not going to be physical, if you're not going to want to bang on both sides of the ball, you're not going to play. It's just that simple.
Is there anybody that can dethrone Wisconsin in the tournament, at least in the Big Ten tournament?
I think Maryland is a legit contender because what it takes, and it's taken this really as far back as I can remember, you cannot win the Big Ten with 1 star player. It just doesn't work that way. You have to have 2 to 3 great players on your roster if you're going to win the Big Ten. And for me, Dez Wells, Melo Trimble, and Jake Layman are a great trio of players. And when you match that up to what Wisconsin can do, it's an intriguing matchup, and I can't wait. I think it's February 24th. Not that we're counting or anything, but that matchup, the one and only matchup between them, that well could be the deciding factor in the Big Ten regular season title. It very well could be. I'm that high on Maryland's ability to play at the same level as Wisconsin. There aren't many teams in the Big Ten that can throw three great players consistently at you. You know, you take a look at Ohio State, they've got two. You take a look at Indiana, they've got one and a half, two, maybe three if you really stretch and Troy Williams or Hannah Mascarera Pereira go off. There's just nobody that can throw waves at you like a Maryland can.
It's the Wisconsin's ability to set up matchups the way they can will be huge mm-hmm. down the stretch. I mean, going into the season, I think a lot of people thought they were a possible number one seed even in the NCAA tournament. Now you look at almost a half of a season in, and you almost think the same thing, even though they've had some struggles against bigger teams throughout the year in non-conference. They're still a team that you would think would be in the hunt for a number one seed, not to talk too early about it, but...
It's still early. I mean, it's halfway through the, technically we're halfway or almost to the halfway in the conference season here. But for me, I mean, you got your Virginias, you've got your Dukes, what happens if Kentucky loses a game? Because at that point, that means they've lost in what is really a mediocre SEC. There's no Florida up there to challenge them. I mean, who do you look to? Do you look to Alabama? Do you look to, some of these other schools? I'm just not sold that there's a definite 1-2-3-4 right now. And Wisconsin's sitting right on the edge of that. I think if they win the Big Ten outright in the regular season and at least get to the semifinals, there's no way they're not a number one seed going into the NCAA tournament, which is just mind boggling thinking back to where this program was about 20 years ago.
Andy Coppins with us at Talking10.com, on Twitter at AndyOnFootball. And, of course, talking Big Ten basketball this week, some big games coming up. And you talked about Maryland and what we've seen from Melo Trimble and what he's been able to do. You look at Layman as well. By the way, I thought you were going to say one of the big three for them was Evan Smotrich for a second.
You sure? Maybe in his own mind.
Maybe. But that Maryland squad, Mark Turgeon, I love the way that he coaches that squad. And I love the way that Trimble attacks things. But I think Dez Wells gets a lot of a disrespect, not really in front of him, but disrespect in the fact that he's a big part of that offense. And when you got a guy that can slash like that to the hoop, man, it's hard to stop an offense like that.
Yeah, and realistically, I think that's going to be the difficult part for Wisconsin. But at the same time, I think that's the underrated part about Wisconsin. I think a lot of people are focusing on their offense skills and their talent. But what makes them so dangerous is that they're like Kentucky in terms of they'll beat you by running the floor and playing a little bit of a speed-up game, but they can kill you by playing a grinded out defensive style of basketball. And that's a difficult thing to be able to switch on and off.
What do you think we'll find from this Maryland-Ohio State matchup on Thursday? I think if Ohio State is some type of contender, they got to get a win at home against Maryland.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you just take a look at Ohio State's schedule and it's like, okay, who have you beaten? Every time you've gotten a win over a supposedly good team, that team has just crapped the bed right after it, and it just hasn't helped. And so getting a win against Maryland would be huge because Maryland has that cachet. And you know, and they'll be able to bounce back from that type of a loss. But I'm still waiting to find out what the real Ohio State is. I mean, I've watched them play at least 15 times this season, and I'm still not sure exactly which team is going to show up on any given night. And I'm sure that's got to be frustrating to the fan base.
It is, but I think that you have to go into sometimes for big fans, you got to go into the season understanding what it is. And after you watched a couple games of this squad, it came clear that we've got some of the best talent on the squad, we being Ohio State. We got the best talent in the league, some of the best talent in D'Angelo Russell, Shannon Scott, Sam Thompson. Those are really good players, but you got to piece it together. And what are your thoughts on Thad Matta putting the closing gates on Amir Williams pretty much?
Yeah, you know, for me, there has not been a more disappointing individual player in the Big Ten than Amir Williams. Second to that might be Brandon Dawson at Michigan State. But outside of that, for me, he's frustrating to watch right now. And obviously, Thad Matta has kind of had enough. And, you know, kudos for him for at least making a move, because a lot of coaches don't have the gall or the guts to say, okay, I'm going to take a veteran player and do something that most coaches don't do. And, you know, that's kind of ride him on the bench, or, you know, kind of make him a non-factor until he shows that he can be a consistent effort player. And that's the weird part. Amir Williams coming into this season for me, it wasn't about effort for him. It was about production. But this year it's been the flip side. He hasn't really shown the effort, which is weird.
And you got a younger player in Jayshon Tate who might not be the size to play center. He's definitely not. He's more of a wing player. But
right. When
he's going to put the effort out, you got to insert him into the lineup. And he's shown strong, at least in the first two games that he started at power forward / center. So it's a move that had to be made, I think. But when you look down the road for Ohio State and you look at Maryland on Thursday, there's no way they can not play Amir Williams, is there?
No, you have to. For me, I think it's a matchup situation. You can't go into that game with a guy like Lehman. And, you know, you made fun of Evan Sumatra, but, you know, the size factor there up front for Maryland is a big deal. You can't go in. Unless you're going to be Thad Matta and play all zone, you cannot go in and expect to win that game with that lineup that they've played over the last few weeks. It just cannot happen. So I think you have to play Amir Williams, see what happens, and adjust from there. But if he gives you the effort defensively, I don't care what he does on the offensive side of the ball. There's plenty of other players that can do stuff for you. But if the effort's there defensively, he's got to stay in.
D'Angelo Russell's gotten a lot of buzz from the national media this week after a couple of great passes against Northwestern. I think that really sparked people to understand that this might be a one-and-done talent, and he might just be the most talented player in the league. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Where you think D'Angelo Russell stands in the league shooting guard-wise, and if he's going to be gone after this year?
I think he goes after this year. He is an NBA ready blah blah blah. He is an NBA ready player, right off the bat for me. And I knew that coming into the season. I mean, you know, the accolades at the AAU and high school level were there, but he is physically ready. The most surprising part for me is that he's been more than a scorer. I thought maybe that might be the issue with him, is that he was going to be the scorer and he might not fit into the team system, but he's really been an all-everything type of a player for Ohio State. And you got to wonder where this team would be without him, not just because of his scoring, but his ability to get others involved in the game.
At one point, last time out against Indiana, he ran the offense. He was the point guard of the offense, and that means not only is Amir Williams on the bench, but Shannon Scott, who at the beginning of the season was averaging somewhere near 10 assists per game. But when you've got a player that when you just watch him, Andy, you just know that guy is ready for the next level, just by not even the scoring, like you mentioned, not even the supreme passing, but just knowing where he needs to be on the court, understanding the important parts of the game and how to enhance those in his game, I think you just watch and you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about D'Angelo Russell, who's second in the league in scoring with, 19.4 points a game is his average. And then he's also tied for third in assists in the league. That's crazy for a freshman to be able to be that unselfish but selfish at the same time, and for him to get what it takes to put his foot on the gas on the scoring department or getting others involved, it's a mental thing for him, and that's why I think he ends up going, because I think that's the part of the game that's missing from a lot of freshmen when they leave, is the mental aspect. Sure, they've got the physical tools. Sure, they've got the scoring ability or the rebounding ability, but they've never put it all together, and Russell has that all. And the other interesting part for me is just looking at the stats here, I cannot believe there's not a single, well, I can, but it's ridiculous to me that there is not a single Ohio State player in the top 20 in rebounding in the Big Ten. That's insane.
You want to hear an insane stat? And I don't mean to be on the picking of Amir Williams train, but whatever. This guy had 28 offensive rebounds at one point during the season before he got benched total. Jayshon Tate and D'Angelo Russell got 11 in one game together.
I know. It's insane. It's absolutely insane to think of those type of numbers. But at the same point in time, I mean, it is what it is, and you got to adjust. And I think, you know, Ohio State's kind of starting to figure it out. They remind me a lot, and this is going to sound weird, but they remind me a lot of what Michigan went through during the non-conference season, where they're starting to really kind of figure out who exactly they are. And once they figured out that rotation, they're a much better basketball team today than they were, you know, December 28th.
That's the one thing about non-conference that's so tough. I mean, a lot of the teams, you're either on one side, you play a lot of big conference heavy teams, or you play a lot of slacking conference teams.
Penn State,
Ohio State's even on that edge.
Illinois.
Penn State was the worst, though. I mean,
by far.
By far, they come into conference play like 11-1, whatever, 9-2, but you know they're not that good. But it's kind of a double-edged sword to the fact that Thad Matta did not know the best rotation to run probably until the start of last week.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, because this is a team that's reloading. I mean, they've gone through three great, you know, generations of players here. And so at some point you're going to have to reload. But, I think, you know, all you need to do is look to the north and look at Michigan State and the problems that they're having. This is a program that really suffered for two or three years on the recruiting front, and they're paying for it in terms of they've missed on some, you know, they got a Gary Harris, right? But in that class was also Brendan Dawson, Ken Kaminsky. They missed on some massive, projected projects for them, and they're paying for it now in the Big Ten, because right now that's about as mediocre as I've ever seen a Michigan State program.
Didn't you write something at Talking10.com about Tom Izzo?
No, I wrote something about how they've lost their mojo, I can tell you that much. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, Tom Izzo has done a good job of reinventing himself and kind of keeping himself hip and relevant, right? But at the same point in time, he's been there for so long that it feels like this is a program that's slipping instead of getting better. And it's not for a lack of great recruiting or anything like that in terms of the star ratings or whatever. But what has been successful for Michigan State is they've sprinkled great star-rated players in with junkyard dog type recruits, right?
Yeah.
It's been the Adrian Payne's. While he was a highly thought of, he was not the, you know, around the nation, people wouldn't know who Adrian Payne was coming out of high school. He's, you know, that was the type of player that he was recruiting, and he's missed on those types of players as of late. Now, supposedly the next recruiting class coming in is loaded. with, I think, three players inside the top 150 or whatever. But at the same point in time, we've seen it before, and they've got to prove it on the court this time around. Otherwise, this is going to be interesting to see what happens with the end of the Izzo era, because we all know that it's going to come sooner rather than later. I mean, the guy's been around for, what, 20 years almost?
It's the thing that I think sticks out in is the recruiting, not only not being high level, but what Tom Izzo's known for is turning low-level recruits into high-level players. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, like Adrian Payne, and we're just not seeing Travis Trice. Yeah. was supposed to be the next point guard of this program. Sure, he's had some good numbers this year, but still not the type of Michigan State point guard you're expected to see. Same you can say offensively for Brandon Dawson, trying to turn things around, Denzel Valentine as well. And the big thing is coming together and playing a team basketball, which we definitely have seen not happen this year. And I think the last few years, Izzo's become a little bit more comfortable with letting guys play a more style basketball that deems professional-like mm-hmm. type basketball.
No, and I agree. I mean, it's weird because they've got three players that are averaging 14 or 11 points and more, right? You've got your Denzel Valentine, you've got your Travis Trice, and all of that. But at the same point in time here, if you take a look at some of the other numbers, for this team, if you take a look at them in conference play, it's a lot different when you take a look at that. When you take a look at the fact that where's Brendan Dawson here? Oh, weird. Oh, I don't see. Oh, gee, what do you know? Brendan Dawson down at 27th. I mean, you know, averaging 12 points a game. And then you've got Denzel Valentine averaging 13.6. But outside of that, and Travis Trice doing 16.7 right now, and yet they're still losing basketball games. That speaks to defensive effort, and maybe they're missing some things as a team here. They're such a confusing, and for me, just a mediocre. When you watch them play in the Breslin Center, it just doesn't feel right for some reason.
You know what they need? They need more tum-tum.
No, they need more Mateen Cleaves.
Suit them up.
They need some more Cleaves in their lives.
the Spartans, not necessarily a targeted type of team to win it outright. The Big Ten,
no.
Obviously, and you're looking at what they've done so far, it's almost nearly impossible unless they win the tournament outright. But are they an NCAA tournament team? And I guess the question is, when you look at the Big Ten, are there six teams that will make the NCAA tournament?
That's a good question, because right now you're taking a look at that middle of the Big Ten, and it, like I said at the beginning, it's a jumbled up mess. It means that there's a lot of really good programs there, but it also means there's a lot of mediocre programs as well. And they're going to beat the crap out of each other down the stretch here. And that means you're going to see a lot of teams with 6, 7, 8. Yeah, I think you're going to see probably the majority. You're going to see two teams kind of rise to the top. I think you see Maryland and Wisconsin, maybe with 2 or 3 losses. And then after that, you see everybody else with 7 losses or more. And that's a problem if you're the Big Ten, because you've got nothing to hang your hat on at that point. So I would say 5 teams. There's an outside shot at 6, depending on, I think, personally, what Purdue or Nebraska does here. But at the same point in time, I mean, it's going to be tough if you're Iowa to point to a game. You know, if you're Ohio State, you've got to hope that you can win that game against Maryland on Thursday, because that's it. That's about it in terms of your ability outside of the Wisconsin game or whatever to really hang your hat on a quality win. I mean, Marquette's looking a little bit better, but it's not like, you know, it's not the game that's going to put you over the hump in terms of getting to the NCAA tournament. Well, let's put it that way.
Yeah, their only big win is against Indiana at home, the highest RPI win for them as well. When you look at the Big Ten and the standings as of now for conference wise, Wisconsin, Maryland, Indiana, Ohio State, assume those four were in. You still got Michigan, Iowa, Michigan State, Nebraska, even Purdue that I think could possibly battle to try and get a spot in that NCAA tournament, depending, of course, a lot of things have to happen for each team. But when you look at those teams, I think, to me, the one that could come out and surprise people, and this is going to sound crazy, maybe not as much after they played against Wisconsin and they got that big win against Nebraska, but Michigan is on the right upswing to be one of those teams to sneak into the tournament.
Oh, yeah, 100%, which is weird because they've got a ton of really bad losses on their schedule. But if they're the team that comes out with, you know, they're the only team kind of to break out of that pack of, you know, of Indiana, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa, right? If they're the team that breaks out of that pack, they're going to make the NCAA tournament. For me, I think what you're finding is that this is the team. And we've been waiting for it all season. And it's funny because it's like kind of a running joke amongst the Talking 10 staff, at least, that, oh, who's the number three team in the Big Ten this week? Oh, who's going to lose this week? It happens every time. You know, Minnesota was the hot selection at the beginning of Big Ten play, and they've been utter junk. And then, you know, then it was Ohio State. Oops. And they go out and promptly lose. And then it was Iowa. Oops. And then it was, you know, Indiana. Oops. And it just continues to happen. So it's going to be really intriguing to see what happens here. But, you know, it all goes for me to Aubrey Dawkins and his ability to be a force for this team. When you take a look at the fact that he scored in double digits two of the last three games for them, and it just so happens to be the same. It coincides with Caris LeVert being out. That's massive. And he's really changed things since he's been getting major minutes. I wrote about this. I think he only had two double-digit minute games in non-conference play. And suddenly, all but I think it's every game now in Big Ten play, he's played at least 10 minutes or more. In the last three games, he's played 24 minutes or more. It's just crazy to see where he's come out of, but it's really sparked this team, and it's been his defense more so than his offense, at least in that mid part of the Big Ten schedule, that's really kind of helped them along. And that's exactly what they needed. They've found that rotation that works for them, and with Caris LeVert out, they still might make the NCAA tournament, which I would have thought you were crazy until seeing what Aubrey Dawkins has done to really kind of elevate this team again.
All right, I'm going to make a crazy prediction. I think Michigan makes the NCAA tournament, and they're one of the four that make it from the Big Ten. There will be five total. One will be in the play-in.
Yeah, I think that might be Michigan. I think, you know, I think you got Wisconsin, Maryland, Indiana. I think Ohio State has a better resume. And so if they're within a game of Michigan, or if they make a deep run into the Big Ten tournament, they get into the field. I think Michigan is on that bubble right now of the last four in, or whatever you want to call that stupid thing they do on Tuesday and Wednesday.
It is stupid, isn't it?
I don't understand it. All it is another opportunity to make more money, and it hasn't helped the designated. You know, the mentality was it's going to help the small schools, right? It's going to help them get into the tournament, and it hasn't done it. These small schools, what they've done instead, have gone out and gotten really good. You got your Wichita States, you had your Creightons, you had your, you know, your Gonzagas are still really, really good. You've got your VCUs, you've got, you know, all these schools that were on the bubble or, you know, whatever, 3, 4, 5 years ago have gotten really freaking good again. And they're earning it on the court night in and night out during the regular season. So it's kind of ironic. And basically it's just become a house for mediocre Power Five teams.
It's interesting when you look at the big national spectrum, like all these little teams, little Gonzaga. I mean, we expect to be ranked in the top 25, but they're third in the country. Teams that necessarily haven't been strong the last 10 years are making their way. You mentioned Wichita State, Utah, VCU still in the top 25. West Virginia's always been strong, but you got a team like Northern Iowa. You've got teams that Butler's still in the top 25. Colorado State is in there. SMU, all these.
Dayton.
Dayton killed us in the tournament last year. Stephen F. Austin's talked about all the time.
Wyoming.
There's so many good ones. Is that, I heard it talked about a little bit earlier on national radio this week. They said that they think that that's a lot to do with parody, but I just think it has a lot to do with the parody, but it's a lot to do with these schools know how to recruit now.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Let's just go down the list here. Kiefer Sykes at Wisconsin Green Bay. If you've seen Kiefer Sykes play, tell me how he was not good enough for a Power 5 school.
Right.
I mean, that guy seriously is probably the most electric player at the rim in college basketball. He's allegedly a 6-footer, and I've stood right next to him. He's shorter than I am, and I'm 5'9". So he might be 5'8¾" at best. That dude gets up, and he scores. He distributes the ball well. What it is these schools are finding this talent before the big schools do. That's simply the case. They're going at the younger levels, and they're recruiting them harder. They're building better relationships. And it's working. And the other part is they also know that the part of parity for me is that the playing field is leveled in terms of exposure. You know, there's the weekly games on for the Horizon League. You know, there's contracts out there for other leagues now where you can get on television, get your exposure, and the stigma of playing at a mid-major doesn't really exist anymore. For me, there's low major, and then there's everybody else. I think the MEACs, the SWAC, the Atlantic Suns and stuff like that, while they can get a school to make a run once in a great, great while, they're, you know, the Horizon League has been great. The Missouri Valley, the Atlantic Tens, the Colonial Athletic Associations, the West Coast Conference, they've been great at identifying talent and finding young, admirable coaches. And I think that's where they've had the difference, is that they've got really young and talented coaching, and it continues to happen for them.
Andy Coppin's with us. You can find his work at talking10.com, on Twitter at AndyOnFootball. Before we let you go, we got to break down our midseason Big Ten conference teams. Now, I did put a little bit of a waiver in there. You can only take one player from each team.
Oh, God.
So, you know, that makes it a little bit difficult. That means I wouldn't make you pick 14 because, you know, that could be tough. And I'll let you have some of the guys that I have. That's fine.
Okay.
I don't want you stuck with Amir Williams at center. So
Don't worry. It's not going to happen.
All right. At point guard, I took Melo Trimble just because of the excitement factor and the factor of what he's brought to the Maryland table. When Des Wells was out, he's really stepped up. And I think that if I were to start a team as a Big Ten conference member, I'd want Melo Trimble as my point guard.
Yeah, I see that, but I'm going to go with a little more experience at point guard, and I'm going to go Yogi Ferrell at Indiana. For me, I think he's really matured and become a leader on that team. And if you've seen him play enough, he's changed his game. He's become a lot better from the outside. And I like his game, and I think he's a quality enough point guard to be able to score, but he also distributes and is a leader.
I could definitely see that this year, where he was last year to where he is this year, and understanding, especially just the sacrifices he has to make as a point guard, he's been so efficient shooting and making sure he distributes well, and that's been huge. So that is a good pick at point guard. Shooting guard, no doubt, D-Russ. Doc D'Angelo Russell.
I'm going to go with the same there. I mean, how can you go wrong with D'Angelo Russell? Like we said, distributing. Really, the only part of his game that isn't there is the rebounding effort right now, but he's not asked to do that necessarily. So, I think that's a good way to go at the shooting guard spot.
Taron Pettaway is who I took at small forward, despite not living up to the potential that I think was put on him at the beginning of the year. But the pressure that was put on him was huge.
But did you see his 32-point game the other night? Like,
I did. That dude
is a scorer. That's flat out what he is. I like that pick. It's really difficult for me at small forward because you've got a lot of choices in this league. And,
sure do.
You know, I think you could go that route. I would love to, but I think I'm going to – oh, boy. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I'm going to surprise some people here with this pick. I'm going to go with Jared Utoff at Iowa.
That's a good pick.
Simply because he fits my group of players a little bit better, I think, in terms – you've got a lot of similarities if you've got, if you've got you know, Yogi Ferrell and everybody else on that team. But I'm going to go Jared Utoff. I think he provides a lot of slashing ability, but also ability to post up for down low and, you know, just simply post up and shoot a three-pointer. And that's a difficult thing to – and he's got the size at 6'9" to do a lot of damage. So I'm going to go Jared Utoff at Iowa.
He's on Andy's – team.
Which pains me.
He's also on Bo Ryan's favorite team. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. The thing about Utoff, too, man, is the way he spreads defenses with what Iowa does, it's pretty impressive. And the way he's grown as a basketball player, good spot at that small forward position. Power forward, though, in the Big Ten, if you've already selected some guys from certain teams, it's a definitely – It's a weak position in the conference. I went with Aaron White. He's injured right now, but he brings a lot of scoring into the game. He's not a good rebounder, and that's what you were finding in the Big Ten this year, is there's a lot of power forwards that can either score or either rebound, and there's not a lot that can do both.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I thought about Aaron White, and you know who I'm surprised we have not picked is DJ Newble, you know, the leading scorer in the conference. but, you know, When I'm taking a look at the list here of who's available, I'm going to go Kadeem Jack at Rutgers. Sounds weird, but the guy, I was so impressed with his effort against Wisconsin. The guy is a banger inside, and he can score from, you know, anywhere from 18 feet in, and he does it on a pretty consistent basis. So I'm going to go Kadeem Jack.
I want Frank Kaminsky at center. That's obvious. I mean,
yeah, I was waiting to. I was holding out my badger for that.
it's tough too because you could put Nigel Hayes or Decker at power forward technically too.
Yeah, I would put Hayes at power forward. I think Hayes has to be the number one power forward in the league.
But I'd rather have Kaminsky on my team just because the IQ level that we talked about earlier. You talk about a guy that can do everything. Frank Kaminsky is that guy, and he's definitely might be even in talks for National Player of the Year this year. But my last three bench spots, I put DJ Newbill in there off the bench, James Blackman, and Brandon Dawson because I need some rebounds.
Yeah, I would agree with those three. The only player that I would consider putting in there is Des Wells for me at Maryland. Yep. Just a little more scoring, but I think with Newbill you're going to have plenty of scoring. I think it would be really interesting to see him playing on a team where he's not the guy, where he's not the guy who's got to get the rebounds, the guy that's got to do the dribbling, that's got to do, you know, make him be a two, a true two, where he's not the one with the ball in his hands all the time. I think he'd be more intriguing of a player. I think he's going to be a great professional player when that happens. Whether it's at the NBA level or not is a totally different discussion. But Newbill for me is just an amazing scorer. So you got that off the bench, and you know the other guy I really have been impressed with has been Malcolm Hill at Illinois too, the sophomore, you know, averaging 15.6 points a game in Big Ten play. So there's some interesting options off the bench.
Definitely is. It's been a fun year to cover so far. A weird year, but it's been a lot of fun to watch for sure, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been crazy. It's funny because you know, you write something about one team, right? And then they just go blow it the next game. It's to the point where it's like you almost don't want to jinx the team because, you know, you got fans yelling at you because you're an idiot. And then you've got other fans yelling at you because you jinxed your team or their favorite team. And, you know, I mean, I've written about how Indiana has the mojo, how, you know, how these teams have kind of all just progressed and then slid right back down the hill. So it's been fun because it means that there's a lot of quality basketball being played. But at the same time, it just doesn't help when you're beating the crap out of each other every single night.
He's Andy Coppins. You can check out his work at Talking10.com. He's on Twitter at Andy on Football. Make sure you follow Talking10's Twitter at Talking_10. Andy, thanks for joining us and enjoy the rest of the basketball season.
It's going to be a fun ride, that's for sure.
14 teams, one home. Andy covers it all in the Big Ten Conference at Talking10.com. Make sure you check out his work on Big Ten basketball. It's definitely worth the read. Thanks for listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour this week on BuckeyeSportsRadio.com and the Buckeye Sports Radio app presented by vSporto. I'm Joe Dexter. Have a great week. Next week coming up, we'll talk to Jeremy Birmingham of 11Warriors.com to take a look at National Letter of Intent Day, the class of 2015, and how it will round out, as well as a look at the class of 2016 and how recruiting has changed with Urban Meyer at Ohio State. That's all coming up next week. Thanks for listening. Go Buckeyes!
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.thebuckeyebattlecry.com.